The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Episode 40, attorneys implementing today's technology in their practice. My conversation with solo attorney, entrepreneur, and success coach, Steve Richardson. Hello, I'm Michael D. Eisenberg. I'm the Tech Savvy Lawyer, blogging at thetechsavvylawyer.page and host of the techsavvylawyer.page podcast. In this podcast series, I'll be interviewing lawyers, judges, and others in the area of law to talk about where they see lawyers, new and seasoned, taking advantage of technology in their legal work and how all lawyers can utilize technology to better their practice, improve their services to their clients, and enhance their own lives. My next guest is bankruptcy attorney, success coach, and author of Getting Off the Hamster Wheel, Steve Richardson. Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
I appreciate you being here. And to get things started, let's ask, what is your current tech setup?
I'm pretty much all Apple, Michael. I had years ago been in the Windows camp and slowly got sucked in through the gateway drug that is the iPod. And then from that to the phone, to the iPad, to the, when we went to replace our laptops, my wife and I got MacBooks. So right now I have a Mac Mini in my office with a 27 inch monitor. In my home office, I have a Mac Mini with a 19 inch monitor. And I'm right now I'm working from a MacBook Pro with the new M1 Pro chip that I have docked to two monitors, a 20 inch and a 22 inch. Tablets. I have an iPad Air that I use with a Bridge Bluetooth keyboard and an Apple Pencil. That's for document review and taking notes. And I have an iPad Mini that's more for consumption of information, reading articles and things like that. And then I have an iPhone XS, which I'm going to be upgrading this fall to whatever Apple comes up with. So pretty much end to end. And I have an Apple Watch and it's just Apple pretty much everything.
But, you know, my wife loves her iPad Mini because it allows her to consume information anywhere, because she likes to put it in her purse. And then if we're like traveling, you know, just on a short trip around town, or, you know, if we're going a long trip, she gets to take her library of books, keep track of her Facebook and in her social media, and then also her email. All it's all the convenience of within her purse, but it's larger than a simple iPhone. Which is fine for me when I'm on the road, but if I'm going to kick back, whether it's at the gym or in travel, it's going to be my iPad Pro with the M1 chip, which I got to tell you, it cooks. But I'm surprised that you're like what, 3 or 4 years on your iPhone? That's a long way to keep for, especially for a practicing attorney.
Well, I'll tell you, it's one of those things that, I mean, Apple products, it's in their nature that you see people that have laptops that are 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and Apple supports right now, even the current operating system supports all the way back to the 6S. So it becomes a question of if it works and it does what you need it to do, why replace it? And a lot of the changes that are being made to the Apple phones, the iPhones, are more in the cameras and things like that. The XS gives me the full screen with Face ID. And I've got a good camera on it. My wife has the newer one. She has a 12 Pro.
Okay.
So if we need the LiDAR for, you know, low light photos and things like that, we can always use her phone. But so, yeah, I mean, it's not unusual for me to be 2, 3, 4 years on a phone before I replace it. I recently checked the battery health on it and it's down to 79%. So,
oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, now it's draining faster and I really do need to replace it this fall.
Well, I will say that the iPhone 13, I have the iPhone 13 Max and the battery on life on that is amazing. It lasts all day and I still have plenty of juice at the end of the day. And that's me using it on the phone. That's me using it as a hotspot. and the screen and the camera, they're both clear and vivid. I love it. But, you know, the one thing that's interesting is I've been to three different conferences in the last 3 weeks. And what I find amazing is all the attorneys that have iPhones, but yet they have Windows machines. They all talk about how they love their iPhones. And it's just amazing that they're still stuck or anchored to their Windows machines, usually because they're part of a larger firm. And, you know, the cost benefits in their mind is, well, it's cheaper up front. Forget the fact that the machines will die in 2 or 3 years. But that's another story in itself. But tell you what, let's get into the questions. What are your favorite three tech tools, hardware or software, that you use to manage your time at work?
I use for task and scheduling, I use OmniFocus. Mutually, we both know David Sparks, who's a big proponent of it. I find its power and the way it really adapts to David Allen's Getting Things Done. It really works for me. And I use, I do block scheduling on Apple Calendar. Because, you know, it's one thing to have a to-do list. It's another thing to know how much, realistically speaking, you're going to be able to get done in the course of a day. And I find the block scheduling really helps me to focus in on realistically how much I can get done. And it keeps me from feeling overworked. I use Microsoft Bookings for appointments. There's also things like, I believe you use Calendly, Fantastical in their most recent version. Have come out with this, but being within, I use Microsoft Office, that suite, they already have Bookings, so that's built right in. And I found that to be very useful in clients can schedule a call. They need to talk to me, they click a link, they schedule it, gets on my calendar. I have much fewer unscheduled incoming calls, which I'm trying to eliminate completely.
Right.
So that makes it so much easier. And anything you can do to reduce the friction for people getting in to see you is good.
If I may, you mentioned, I think off mic that you use RingCentral.
Yes.
Now, is RingCentral a virtual receptionist, or do they just, is it just a means to get your call to find you?
RingCentral is a VoIP provider for my phone. I went to VoIP a while back. So, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but that's my phone system. I use CallRuby as my receptionist. And what they do there is they can do a fair amount of basic intake and they are able to fill out a web form of information that drops it directly into my CRM.
Yep.
So when I call them back, I have a lot of initial information for them. So that makes it a lot more efficient. I'm not doing that intake and it saves me a lot of time.
We'll get more into that in our next question, but going back to, hardware and software that you use to manage your time at work. Is there anything else?
Well, of those three, those for the most part.
Well, let's talk about OmniFocus for a second. OmniFocus is a very powerful task management program. Now, should the Luddite be concerned about trying to use something like that?
There's a lot of talk in this space. People are proponents of whether it's OmniFocus or Things or just Apple Reminders or something like that, Microsoft To Do. It's really whatever works for you. It's whatever helps you. The important thing is, going back to David Allen and his methodology, is you need to get it out of your head and into a trusted system. And that reduces stress incredibly. If something occurs to me, I get it into OmniFocus, and then I don't have to worry about it anymore because I know it's already in my system. So whatever works for you, I find that OmniFocus does that for me. Quite frankly, it's very powerful and it may be more for what a lot of people need. So it's really a choice that the individual has to make. As far as the Luddite is concerned, again, a trusted system. If you want to do something as simple as reminders on the Apple ecosystem, it's becoming more robust.
Right.
And start with that and see how you go. And you can always, you know, up your game with another app, go up to Things or Todoist is another one. But again, it's whatever works for you and whatever you'll use, because it'd be a great system, but if you're intimidated by it, you're not using it, it's not doing you any good.
Share with us three power functions you use from OmniFocus.
Well, there's the intake. I hit Command Control T, and that brings up a window. And I just type in. I type in what it is. I tag it. I associate it with a file if it's related to a file. I use defer dates. You know, I get an idea of when I'm going to do it. And sometimes I don't, because once a week I do a review of all of my projects and everything that's in OmniFocus. And there may be some things that I haven't scheduled yet. Oh, I'll do that this week and I'll give it a defer date.
Okay.
So that is like, no matter where I am, I can do Control Command T and I can put something in there. Another thing that I use, like I said, is the review function. There is a particular feature of OmniFocus in which you can go into and review everything in your system. I do it on Sunday mornings and I say, all right, what am I doing? What are my projects? Because, and what do I want to do this week? And I start planning out my week. What is that one thing? What are the Gary Keller talks about the one thing that you can do today that will make everything else either unnecessary or easier. Dave Fries, another marketing person who talks about, you know, the top three things. You pick three things that you're going to do. So this is that review feature of OmniFocus, which is, I don't want to say unique to them, but they're one of the few apps that actually have that feature built in that allows you to do that review. And I found that to be very powerful. Because you're saying, oh, I'm not going to get to that project this week, but maybe next week or some such thing. And then you can set how often you review a particular project. The third feature I would say is it's just so powerful. It gives you what are called perspectives. It's different ways of viewing the data. You can look at it many different ways. How many are coming up on deadline? How many are, you know, have a defer date where let's see, what am I doing tomorrow? What do I have on the list for tomorrow? What's tagged in a particular way. I have one tag called quickie. You know, I've finished up early. I've got 5 minutes before my next meeting.
I
pull up my quickie perspective. What can I do in a couple minutes to knock off the list? So I would say those are the three big features that I found in OmniFocus that really help.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. Let's move on to the second question. What are the best three tech tools, software or hardware, to run a virtual practice?
The first one is, and I talk about this in my book, Getting Off the Hamster Wheel. The first thing you look at is online storage. You know, where are you going to put your data? Because, you know, in order to have a virtual practice, you have to be able to access documents and information anywhere, which means using some sort of cloud server. I use OneDrive, but sometimes use the Google system, and there's the Google Drive. Apple has their own ecosystem and iCloud Drive, but it's your online storage. The next is cloud-based software. I moved to that when I moved from Windows to the Mac because I needed apps that were more platform independent. And because they ran from a browser, they didn't really have to be installed on any particular machine as long as I could access the website. And again, you're working from anywhere. So I use Clio for my practice management software. There are a lot of others out there. My case, Practice Panther, FileVine, that sort of thing. Some are better for certain practice areas than others. I am a bankruptcy attorney, so I use Next Chapter, which is cloud-based, and it's good because I have a virtual assistant in Kansas. So she's able to go in, prepare the petition, get it ready for me. We can both look at it, and it makes it a lot easier. And I also have, as I mentioned before, Microsoft 365. So that's where I get off Word and Excel and Outlook. I use PowerPoint. And also they have a lot of other apps. Like I use Teams to communicate with my assistant, or Bookings I mentioned earlier for scheduling.
Is Bookings part of 365 or is that separate?
That's part of it. There's a whole suite of apps that come with Microsoft 365 that can be very helpful that go beyond your basic office suite of Word and Excel and PowerPoint. So I find that very helpful. The third, from a hardware standpoint, we mentioned it before, is RingCentral for my phone. Again, there's Nextiva, there's Dialpad, there's Vonage, there's all sorts of vendors that will give you a VoIP system. And that allows you, again, to work from anywhere because it's internet based. I have an app on my phone that spoofs my office line.
Right.
So I can make and receive calls from my cell phone without anybody knowing what my cell phone number is.
Right.
I can text from that line using their software. So clients can text me. They also include free cloud fax. So it used to be when I'd go on vacation, I'd unplug my fax machine. Okay. So nobody could say they faxed something to me while I was away. But now I can, somebody faxed me. I can pull it up on my phone and look to see what it is. An amazing thing as far as being able to work from anywhere and being virtual. And then just as a bonus, I have a 1080p webcam and I can use Zoom or Teams or because I'm in the Apple ecosystem, FaceTime and Clio's legal trends report that they come out every year has talked more and more about since the pandemic that the public is not only more comfortable with meeting virtually, but a lot of them expect it. They expect you to be able to meet with them virtually. It's not just the benefit to you of being able to work from anywhere, especially if you're a true solo or even a supported solo. Meeting the expectations of the potential client.
Well, it's funny. I've been doing just by phone for 15 plus years that I've had the practice, and I've never had a complaint. You know, a lot of my clients aren't necessarily as tech savvy as necessary. And also, you know, it's a question of whether or not they have the internet access, although that's becoming less and less an issue as internet is and broadband is expanding everywhere. And, you know, I have a VA practice, Department of Veterans Affairs, where we're doing veterans appeals, and they can have hearings now virtually where the judge is in his or her chambers or our home office in DC, the veteran is at their house, and I can just do this from my home office or office downtown without having to worry about traveling and other, you know, issues along those lines. So I may have to move to a more virtual consultation versus a telephone consultation, but right now I'm going to stick with the telephone.
Whatever works for you and whatever works for the client. And a lot of them, they're fine with the phone. Being able to meet face-to-face and talking to some extent, there's a benefit there. But I found the pandemic to be, I've opened up geographically some of my practice areas that can be done with phone calls and emails and things like that. I don't have to physically go somewhere. So I'm able to handle a couple practice areas through all of New Jersey where I couldn't before. Simply because of this. So just some advantages of the pandemic.
Well, since I have a federal practice, I take clients all across the country and internationally. And so I've been using Vonage, which gives me great long distance and unlimited hours, for the amount that I pay, which is another reason why I'm sticking with the telephone for a while. Let's move on to our third question. Everyone talks about going paperless. Many know about scanning, OCRing, and storing documents. What are your favorite three tech trips you use to take your paperless office to the next step?
Well, being paperless, Michael, is absolutely critical to being able to work from anywhere and being virtual. And because you can't, you're tied to your file cabinet otherwise, and you can't effectively do that. What I do is, number one, I mentioned my iPad. I have an iPad Air that I use with an Apple Pencil. I use PDF Expert, and that allows me, number one, I can review documents. I get discovery in. I can review it, mark it up, things like that with my notes, and then store it with the file. When I'm doing interviews with clients, with PDF Expert gives me the ability to pull up marking up a document. I just created, as a PDF, my bankruptcy interview form. So I copy it, pull it up, and fill it out with my Apple Pencils as I'm talking to them. Or if it's not a bankruptcy, if it's just notes, PDF Expert can create a new, it's not just writing on it an existing PDF, but can create a new PDF and say, do you want it white, yellow, light blue? Do you want it lined, unlined, gridded? And you pick it, and it's just like having a yellow pad, and you take your notes. And then when I'm finished, I can store it. You know, I've always kept my notes from a consultation. If they didn't hire me, I still always still keep those. But I, when it's over, I can move it into consultations, or if they retain me, I then move it into the file. I now have all of the notes I took going all the way back and have that information. I can look back on it without having to have a pad of paper or anything else. So you're creating virtual documents right on the spot. Secondly, I mentioned fax software, your cloud fax. Not you getting faxes as much anymore these days. It's email and or just uploading a document to a portal. So fewer and fewer times I'm faxing, but having that VoIP provider and RingCentral being able to do that, like I said, I can pull up a fax on my phone or my tablet, wherever I am, and be able to look at it. The third thing is a good client portal. And that's something also that the Clio Legal Trends Report is saying that people are wanting more and more. Clio, people can upload documents to me. We can have part of the problem with texting a client is there's no way of associating that text exchange with the file. Mm-hmm. So you look at it and say, you know, what was discussed? I mean, emails, you can do that, but with texting, you really can't. So by messaging on this Clio portal, all of those messages can be associated with the file and everything can be kept together. They can also say that the portal, as I mentioned in next chapter, they're given, they can log on, they can fill out all the forms, give all that information through the portal. They can upload documents as PDFs or JPEG, you know, photos. And then I can download, my assistant can download them and organize them on our end. And it used to be in my bankruptcy practice that I'd have a big thick stack of of bills and documents and a real rat's nest in my file that I ultimately hand back to the client when I strip down the file and when I close it. But now things are submitted electronically. So I just store it on the server. I don't need a big thick file anymore. So that's very important. And just as a bonus fourth thing, if you're going paperless, there are a couple ways you can go. In my office, I have a 27-inch monitor, you know, big monitor. Another way to go is have two monitors, one of them in normally in your widescreen landscape mode. But if you can get a monitor that rotates into portrait, that can be your document screen. So if you're doing tax work, if you're doing bankruptcy work, if you're working on one piece of software doing and reviewing documents, you can have the documents on the other screen. And that is incredibly powerful. And that's why I have in my home office here a dual monitor setup.
What's the screen resolution you have on those?
And whatever, I like ViewSonic. That's my particular vendor of choice. I have a 20 inch and a 22 inch.
But you don't know the DPI?
No, I just basically, when I configure them in, on the Macs, I just say whatever the native resolution is. I don't set it to it. I said, just have dual. That's usually the best bet anyway, rather than trying to force a resolution on the machine.
Right. But you don't know if it's a 4K or.
Oh, no, they're not 4K. They're nice high resolution, but I haven't really seen the need to go that high definition. And, I usually, the documents are pretty clear as far as readability and things like that. And the video has been pretty good.
Yeah, I've got two LG 4Ks flanking me left and right with my iMac Pro monitor dead center, which, and I understand and agree when you talk about having one document open on a screen and perhaps the Word document you're typing into. And then maybe, like, as you said, your bankruptcy program or some other program on the third, or in this case, a second monitor. And it really makes life a lot easier. I would go into attorney's offices and I'd say, hey, how come you don't have a second monitor on your computer? And like, you can do that. And I'm like, yeah, this is how you do it. And they're like, and like months later, they'll go by, we'll talk. And like, oh my God, I still have that. I love it. You are right. just one little thing you say in the office and suddenly you just made their life a lot easier. Well, let me ask you this bonus question. And we hadn't prepared for this one, but based on the conversation that we've had, I've got to ask you, what are three reasons attorneys should be going from Windows to Mac?
The first thing that occurs to me is just the cell phone of choice. The smartphone of choice for lawyers has been clearly the iPhone. And you mentioned earlier, you'll see people, they love their iPhones, they're using their iPhones, and then they just go to a Windows machine. It is the interoperability of everything in the Apple ecosystem. Everything works together. Mm-hmm. Everything synchronizes together. And I can move things around from, I have two screens here, but I can take my iPad. I can use a feature of the Mac operating system called Sidecar, and I can have a third monitor right there, turning my tablet into that.
Right.
I've done two-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. You'll say, all right, well, text me the code and then type it in here. Or you put the cursor in the field to type it in, and the operating system will come up and say, well, you got this text with this code. You want to plug it in here? Yes, please. And it's done. So just the ability to move things around and the interoperability of all the hardware and the software. And now with their own, what they call Apple Silicon, they have their own computer architecture where you can run an app that's written for the phone or the tablet on a Mac and vice versa, because they're all using pretty much the same guts, as it were. And I don't necessarily, I mean, it's a different way of thinking. I had to make some adjustments moving from Windows to the Mac, just because the Mac does things a bit differently.
Right.
I find it easier. Some people don't. It's a personal thing.
It all works on the same basic principle of a WYSIWYG. What you see is what you get. And if you learn a couple of the basic functions, you can translate that to using the computer in its entirety without any major issues. You can make that transfer with very simple ease. And, I taught myself one program on one computer 40 years ago. And from there, I was able to translate that into Windows, and then from Windows 3. Whatever into, Windows 95, then Windows 95 into a Mac. Mm-hmm. Once you learn those basic principles, they tend to translate.
Yeah, they do. And because of the way Apple and they're constantly being challenged these days because of it, but their app store, one of the advantages and a lot of advantages to the user of those app stores, maybe not to the developer, but that there's a consistency of interface, command such and such or keyboard combinations pretty much work the same way in every app. So there's a familiarity. It's a lot easier to learn a new program,
right?
Because of the way that works.
But I think more importantly on how they sandbox their software is going back to the first factor that you talked about. It works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, you want a machine that works, not a machine that's constantly plagued with viruses and updates. And that's what we tend to get with Windows. And I just don't understand how like my machines would die after two or three years, because I would push them. I wasn't doing major film editing or recording or major number crunching, but the computers would die. And when my Dell died in my first year of my law practice, I'm like, I was frustrated, but I'm like, well, wait, I'm the boss. I can pick whatever I want. I'm going back to the Mac. Mm-hmm. And that's how I've been running for about 14, 15 years now. So I'm happy as a pie.
Yeah. And we both remember the old days. I mean, you'd replace a machine every 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're coming out with a new version of Windows. Well, you got to get a new machine because every iteration of Windows became more of a resource hog, needed more speed, needed more RAM, needed more everything. And you're constantly upgrading every 3 or 4 years. Whereas, people are keeping Mac laptops and machines for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. You may pay more for them, but they last longer. And if you consider the cost over time, it's about equivalent.
Well, to satiate my geek geekiness, if you will. I'm typically like on a lease program for my phone. I definitely am. Currently, I'm for my iMac. I'm not sure what I'm going to do for my next Mac purchase when this lease expires in August, September. Uh-huh. I may end up purchasing it. I may lease it. I haven't figured that one out yet, but at least every 2 or 3 years, I get a new Mac. And also their buyback program is fantastic. Mm-hmm. You may not be getting the most amount of money possible, but you usually get a very good rate. And that is, you can apply into your next purchase, mm-hmm. which, you know, I've always been happy with. So which I don't see, you don't see that with Windows, you know, Windows, which are they closing their stores? I know Microsoft Windows had a bunch of stores, including one here at Tyson's Corner in Vienna, Virginia.
I don't really know. I don't pay attention to that anymore because I've been so in Apple, but yeah, you're right. They may not for trading give you as much as you might get on eBay, but it's the convenience of being mm-hmm. able to go in. And even if you, instead of leasing it, you just purchased it. And right. then when the AppleCare expires, you just trade in the old one and get a new one.
Mm-hmm. And now the AppleCare is, you can get beyond 3 years now. If you go to the month to month program with them on AppleCare, mm-hmm. You can go beyond 3 years for the new purchases now.
I'll have to look into that.
So, you know, I've got a Switch. What did I purchase? My MacBook, my M1 MacBook, which I have just like you. And mm-hmm. I'll switch that over to the monthly because we'll see how long these M1s last, which they're expected to last a really long time.
Yeah, they should.
Well, Stephen, I want to thank you for joining us. Where can people find you?
Well, I try to help out other attorneys. I mentioned my book, Getting Off the Hamster Wheel, which is, you know, there are a lot of, and I went through this, and a lot, I'm sure there are a lot of attorneys out there, to listeners, that they're either true solos, they have no staff, or they have some staff, mm-hmm. and they're feeling kind of overwhelmed, you know, how much, you know, you're so busy, you know, grinding out the work that you don't mm-hmm. have enough time to really mm-hmm. get more work or market right. your practice or that sort of thing. So that's what the book's kind of aimed at. My website is at StephenJRichardson.com. I'm on YouTube at youtube.com/ Stephen Richardson, Twitter at solo to solo with underscores between the words. Mm-hmm. And we talked a lot about a virtual practice and cloud computing and going paperless for your listeners. If they go to cloudbook.stephenjrichardson.com, they can get a free report on a lot more details than we talked about here mm-hmm. on setting up a virtual practice, going paperless, choosing a cloud storage platform, you know, that sort of thing.
I will be sure to have all this in our show notes. And I want to thank you again for joining us. It's been a lot of fun and I really appreciate your time.
Great. It's always fun talking tech to someone.
Absolutely. Listen, you have a great day and thanks again. Now.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast. Our next episode will be posted in about 2 weeks. If you have any ideas about a future episode, please contact me at MichaelDJ@thetechsavvylawyer.page. Have a great day and happy lawyering.